Hey there, podcast listener. Steven here from the podcast you're currently listening to. You ever heard a podcast and think, I can do that? Well, maybe you can, or maybe you can't. Or maybe I can help you get started with it. Hosting is the most expensive cost you'll have in a podcast, and that's why Anchor by Spotify is the easiest way to make a podcast. Really, they have everything you need all in one place. Anchor has tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. With Anchor's hosting, you can distribute your podcast to other listening platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and a whole lot more. And if you think you can do a better job than I, record a podcast right now. There's very low risk involved. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. And best of all, Anchor is free. Download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started today.
Of the battlecruiser Enterprise.
This is Christopher Pike of the USS Enterprise.
This is Captain James Kirk of the USS Enterprise.
This is Jean-Luc Picard, Captain of the Enterprise.
This is Captain Sisko of the USS Defiant.
Welcome, everybody, to The Away Team, a series that recaps each episode of Star Trek in canonical order with a bit of a twist. I'm Stephen Vargas.
I'm Adam Riley.
Doesn't look like it's going to be too long.
No.
You know, some people I guess we have to wait until can I just talk about it now? Well, Comic-Con, right?
Well, yeah, this pretty much.
Yeah. So they released, there's a lot of stuff and we're going to talk about it, but they released the images of the TNG cast that are going to be in Picard season 3.
In what? And what are they going to be?
Picard season 3. And they were talking about Worf and how his hair is too white. Now,
oh my God.
While it is nitpicky, I get it. There's because Klingons are supposed to live as long as Vulcans, and he's technically not that old. And then some people were saying they should have made him look like he looked in the last episode of TNG, blah, blah, blah. But then I was like, none of this is important because. You guys all complained that Klingons look like shit. And so did I. So did I in Discovery. We have a Klingon that looks like a Klingon now.
Yeah, I saw somebody posted online that said, a real Klingon. I was like, oh my God. Like,
but if that wasn't going to be the end of the road for me, but he does look more like a traditional Klingon. He looked like Worf to me. So I don't know what the big fucking deal is.
He looked like a badass to me.
Yeah. And the point that was made, though, and I saw it on Reddit, this dude goes, he goes, fuck this. He's like, he goes, first you guys all fucking complain that the Klingons look strange in Discovery. And then they make this and Klingon looks just like Worf, but his hair's a little too white and you're still complaining. And then I don't know if this is a dig or not. He goes, fuck you. Go watch Star Wars or something. A little toxic at the end, but still, you know.
Well, I mean, he's not wrong.
It's just like,
it's like the same people that complain about Obi-Wan going, fuck, we want the flashbacks. Why don't we get flashbacks of the way they were? And then they give like the flashbacks, you know, in that episode, and everybody's like,
they still complain.
And they still complain about other shit, and then they're like going, fuck you. You said this. It's like, shut the fuck up. I'm sick and tired of hearing you.
With that image, my just me riffing it about people saying, well, he should look like the end of TNG. That version of Worf never existed. That was like an alternate future.
Right. When the Federation and Klingons were at war.
Right. So he looked a little disheveled, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know, so who knows what the fuck he's doing now? But there's one
banging
thing that
bitches
people,
is what I'm thinking. Looking like that.
He's out here, bro. one thing that a lot of people are overlooking that's a powerful image for a lot of Star Trek fans and a lot of Voyager fans. 7 of 9 was in a Starfleet.
I know. Movie. I saw that. I remember going, oh, she's in Starfleet.
It's taken decades until we could get her into it because she never wore one.
Yeah.
There was some weird ones when she went back in time and shit, but never officially wore a Starfleet uniform. And that's a big deal.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see that.
I saw that
my too. My man LaForge is like a straight pimp too.
Dude, he was like, and he's got a family and shit. I was like,
I love it.
And then Riker's line, wherever you go. I was like, oh, that's right. That's my man right there.
Got the doc in there too.
Yeah. Got her. I was like, going, wow. I really like the only one that was missing was Brent Spiner, but obviously he's not because he's not Data.
They said he's going to be there, but playing a different character.
Well, of course, because he's done. Because
Data is officially done.
Yeah,
because I remember Spiner said in an interview when he did the first season, he said he only agreed to come back if this was the finale, like it was done with his character.
Yeah.
Which is because it would be cheap. Like, you keep bringing the same character back. This ain't a comic book. You know what I mean?
And let's be honest, Data can only grow so far.
Right. He'll probably come back as like
another Soong.
He's another Soong.
He's another Soong.
He's a cousin or something.
Yeah. You know? It's like, he's a Hicks. Oh, no. He'll come back as a Soong. But like that character he played on Night Court.
Mm.
That like Hick.
I'd watch that shit.
I would be so down for that.
Although, I will say this. I wouldn't mind seeing O'Brien in that. No, he ended up being a DS9 character. I want to see O'Brien in the Lower Decks, though.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now I'm jumping around a little bit, but, you know.
First of all, before we get into that, because we might, you never know. Before we get into that, what Adam and I have been talking about, I think since Lower Decks actually came out,
yes.
We have wanted a crossover with live action and Lower Decks, and we're gonna get it in the second season of Strange New Worlds.
Yes.
I am so down for that. There's a lot of people that are actually quite down for that.
I think it's gonna be cool because, and we saw in the Strange New Worlds panel when the voice actor for Boimler and I always forget the girl's name, and I love that character.
I totally forgot her name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They came out, the voice actor, there was a little gag like, oh, we can't hang out. They can hang out. Yeah. You know?
Yeah, they've and been
it's,
here.
It's crazy how they do look like their characters.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it is a more simplistic animation style, but they do look like them. So it's you throw a Starfleet uniform on them. I mean, we're good to go.
Well, they did at one point. I think one of the Star Trek things, they actually came out in their uniforms.
From, oh, really?
Yeah, as they're in their characters, they came out dressed in their appropriate uniforms.
And they sound, it's they're not really putting on a voice when it's not one of those where they're making a weird voice. Mm-hmm. That's literally their voice. Because especially the woman, she sounded amazingly like that character. It was great.
I follow her on TikTok and she had like, yeah, this is my day. She goes, she's at her hotel. She goes and gets some coffee. She goes, reading the script, and she was covering up some of it, you know. She goes,
yeah, yeah.
Gonna, because she was reading lines for like 2 episodes, and she's like, 4 hours later, I'm done, you know. And
voice acting sound, like, I know they have a lot of issues with the union and stuff like that, but voice acting sounds like fun.
Yeah, because you can kind of be as big as you want, you know.
Yeah, and you don't have to, you get that celebrity money. But you don't have to be in the public eye too much.
That's what Bruce Willis said when he did the Luke Who's Talking movies, because they asked him about it. And he's like, it's the easiest money that I've ever made.
Yeah, you're just in a sound booth the whole time.
Yeah,
I heard a lot of them don't even see the other people. They're just recording lines.
Yeah, that's what Chris Evans said when they did that Lightyear movie. He goes that he never met any of that. He was just in a booth by himself.
It's kind of weird, though. How do you play off of other people? Because I know some of the Disney movies, they had them all in the same booth back in the day, like when they did the animated ones. But I guess a lot of the newer ones, they don't. They
I think
just
it's
have
because
the individual actor come in.
I think a lot of times it's because scheduling, you know, like they're,
well, no, I get that. But
they all can't, weird. They all can't be Benedict Cumberbatch. You can do it in a car in
know.
Between movies. Listen, you know, it's like, you know,
blessed by the Lord. You know what I mean? But it's like, it seems an actor, most actors anyway, almost require other actors to play off of.
Yeah.
You know, it's like having a conversation with yourself.
You can sometimes tell when you hear the voice actor. Sometimes you can tell it's a little stilted, which is
something
where it's like, okay, they didn't have somebody to react.
It's not bad, but you could tell they weren't in the room together. They're not actually talking to each
other. But I do hear that. I do know, and I'm not a voice actor. This is from stuff that I've heard. I've heard people say that sometimes they'll play the dialogue of that other character.
That makes sense. You already have somebody who's done it, but then I guess that person was asked out. Is had a fucking or maybe you have somebody reading off, you know,
maybe
off
in
mic
the
or something like that. Like that you know, almost like you're warming up.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Anyway,
The Comic-Con panel, they had Strange New Worlds character. They had Pike and Uhura and Spock come out, and then all of a sudden, Boimler and I want to remember her name.
It's annoying because I'm going to look her up right now.
All right. They come popping out. They go, hey, and they're like, so they told us to come out, you know? And they're like, we don't get any chairs? Like, what's the fuck?
Beckett. Mariner.
Mariner.
Beckett,
that's
Mariner.
It. Yeah.
I don't know why I always forget her. I forget all the characters' names on the show. And it has nothing to do with the quality of the show. I love this show.
Except Boimler because they...
Boimler, I remember because it's weird.
Because it's also, they say it like every time. Boimler, they say it all the time.
Because Boimler's kind of the bumbling dude who's always doing weird shit. But like Rutherford, Tendi.
Tendi. Yeah.
Captain Freeman, Ransom. I'm reading it off right now. But like I can never remember. And it pisses me off because I love this show and I feel like I'm being disrespectful.
Somebody asked me about like, they go, oh, so. You
know, Jerry O'Connell be looking right in this fucking picture, bro.
Oh,
no,
right? I know. Totally did. And somebody had asked me, they go like, so, oh, this was when at my old job, they were like, going, so which Star Trek are you into? And they go, of what, all time? And they're like, oh, of the newer stuff. Like, there's a lot out here. And this was before Strange New Worlds popped out. I go, I'm really hyped for Strange New Worlds. I go, but I think even with that, I think Lower Decks is like my number one show.
I'm really hyped for Lower Decks.
With the exception of Strange New Worlds, it's the only one I'm truly excited for, or I've been truly excited for. I was really unsure about it when it first came out.
Yeah, me too.
And after,
because it would very easily be bad.
Yeah,
it could. It just depends on what they're doing.
And the show you know, like I've told people that are like, oh, should I get it? I was like, the jokes are funny, but you kind of have to be in the know. Like, it's really made for fans because of like all the little shit that's in there.
Well, even funny though, I had a friend of mine who's never really watched Star Trek. And I told him, check this show out. It's real funny because he's really into Rick and Morty. Oh, yeah. I said, check this show out. And he's been watching. He watched the first season and he goes, it's fucking hilarious. He goes, I can tell I don't know what the fuck's going on. He goes, but it's really funny. And I'm like, yeah, man, it's a good show. And by the way, they did my man Jerry O'Connell dirty on IMDb. In the known four section, there are four things, okay? Mm-hmm. Sliders, of course. Love that show. Stand By Me, come on,
right.
Classic. Mission to Mars, okay. Kangaroo Jack, my dude, come on. You didn't have to do my man like that. That's fucked up.
It was to balance out the Sliders and the Stand By Me. Like I know you don't want to remember this, but we remember this. Kangaroo Jack.
What is this? Star Trek Discovery Logs, TV series short. Jack Ransom personal audio log?
Oh shit!
I don't remember that.
I don't remember.
We'll have to look that up later. Anyway, we'll go on to.
But the trailer for season three, is great. Looks great to me when they in that shot where it closes in on where they're doing the fucking job fair was fucking hilarious.
Yeah, because their ship is impounded,
right?
Because their captain's on trial, so they have nothing to do. It's just so funny. And the ship's so fucked up. It has all the panels off of it.
Right. You have, because they have Mariner and you have Boimler trying to like recruit people for Starfleet. It's just like, come and join Starfleet. Search the undiscovered country.
Yeah. It's literally those people that would come to school, the high school,
right.
when the seniors are about to graduate for the Marines and the Navy. Had their little pamphlets out.
They had the little model of the Stargazer right there on the table.
God, I was dying.
I love that. And it was obviously a trailer for the whole season, so it looks hilarious. And then the greatest shot in the world, Deep Space Nine. And then you hear
keep circling it and act like you're admiring the pylon.
Yeah, just like, you know, by
wormhole came.
What's funny is that they're going, they go like, okay, I need to do this. Buy me some time. What do you mean? Just circle around. Look like you're admiring the pylons. And they're like, yeah, I know. And then you have like class the station. It's the big shot of the station. You see the ship and the wormhole. And then she's like, and she's like, okay. And he's like, keep circling.
What is that? First of all, I am extremely excited that we're going to be going to Deep Space Nine, and we're going to see, they're saying we're going to see Deep Space Nine characters. And
I hope so.
And that'd all be that. Great. I'm loving it, dude. Because Deep Space Nine doesn't get enough love.
It doesn't.
From even the newer, like the newer Trek stuff, they don't call back to it enough.
Right.
I feel. Maybe because it's probably not going to be as recognizable as some of the stuff they call back to already. And I understand why Discovery doesn't call back to it. It doesn't make any sense. But I have to say, because like I'm hyped about Lower Decks and Strange New Worlds, but I am really hyped for Picard, because I feel like that's like, if it was Doctor Who, that's like my doctor. You know what I mean?
Right.
So like, and I know this is the last season, and I'm excited about that too, because it's an interesting premise in America to have a show where they know they're doing three seasons and then they're going to end it, you know, which means you're gonna have a beginning and an end, which is cool.
Right.
And I'm really excited to see the old cast come back and just like fucking do whatever the fuck they're gonna do.
Yeah.
You know, maybe the Enterprise. And they go to the planet and they go, oh, we got the Enterprise D off the planet. We cleaned it up for you. Bah, 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 bah. It's fucking gone. Da,
da, da, da. Out of nowhere, fucking Riker slides in on the bridge going, da, 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 da.
Listen, if that's stupid and would never happen, but if it did, I'd literally life support. Okay, I'd be at the hospital with a Starfleet badge on my chest.
Yeah, you can also check out. And there was obviously the teaser trailer, which just basically showed all the characters for Picard season 3, by the way.
Yeah, and they all had like a one line that they said. Yeah,
and the way they look now and stuff like that. So you got all the main cast, with the exception, of course, of Wesley and Data.
Well, we already know what's going on with Wesley, though.
Yeah. And so, yeah, so we have that. And it really, really brought up the feels. Like when I saw them, I was just like, oh, shit. That and Lower Decks. When I saw Lower Decks, I was just like going, oh, I'm fucking doing Leo like all the time, like, you know, snapping my fingers and pointing. My animals are still looking at me like, what the fuck are you doing? But I'm really
for like someone who's watched Star Trek for their entire life. Lower Decks is so great.
Oh, it is.
Because it's like nonstop. First of all, the story, like, let's not say it's just a nostalgia trip. The story they tell, while it's usually comedic, is really well done. Like whatever narrative they're doing in that episode, and they've had some of the greatest season finales I've ever seen. Like, they're so good.
I remember season one, going, oh, this is pretty funny. And then just the whole Packlet and then Riker showing up. And it was just like, that made the whole.
No, like, what the fuck is happening?
It made the whole season worth it. Like, I remember people like jumping for fucking joy. And then Riker playing that version of himself. I'm kind of like your Chadich, you know? It's
being an idiot. Fucking, there is so many moments where you just like, you looking in the background and you're like, oh my God, like I remember that, or that's a callback to this. And I know it's dumb, but for if you're a nerd, you feel so fucking cool that you know all of it.
Right.
Like, I remember an episode would come out and Steve was like, did you see that thing in the back? But did you? And I noticed like a lot of the callbacks that Steve would give me were TOS ones. And a lot of the ones I would give him were fucking TNG ones. <You're right. laughs> And I was like, yo, did you see that thing?
And then the one that we didn't know, the one that was from the animated series, the giant Spock. I was like,
because I saw it and I was like,
that is something. Yeah, I'm like, that is something. They wouldn't show it that long if it wasn't something.
I need to watch the fucking original animated series. I'm sleeping on it. I haven't seen it. I didn't even know it existed until like I was an adult. Because we didn't have streaming and shit back in the day.
I remember seeing something about it. I have a vague memory of it, but it was one of those where I couldn't remember if it was real or if I just kind of made it up in my head. It was like, you know, it's one of those, you had chicken pox, 102 fever, you're not sure if it's real or whatever, you know. So, you know.
Aren't they coming? I don't think they mentioned this in Comic-Con, but aren't they going to be coming out in some more comic books too?
There's supposed to be some more comics coming out, but I'm not sure when those. I know Lower Decks is coming out with the comic.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Lower Decks is coming out with a comic.
I think it's September.
Who's putting that? IDW?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
he's had the rights to that for fucking decades, bro.
Yeah. So that's some cool stuff. If you, like I said, if you want to see the trailers for that, you can go to the lazygeeks.com. I think I'll put the link in the show notes too for to go and see those trailers. I have them both on one post. So it's lots of cool stuff on there. And then really quickly, I don't think we're going to go into this episode as hard as we went into the last one. because I don't think we were nervous. I'll just say that we were nervous in the beginning, but it actually turned out to be a pretty good episode. The Orville, New Horizons, Midnight Blue.
We weren't really fucking with it in the beginning.
Yeah.
And then we were like, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah, it took a turn. It took a turn, and then it was like, oh, okay. Because the beginning was so tropish, and it was just like, why are we doing this again? My biggest issue with this, and it's not just this, but it's a lot of sci-fi. Why does anybody not close the fucking door of a shuttlecraft? You're on an alien world, or even a world that you know.
Shouldn't that be automatic?
Nobody locks the doors. Like, it's like, what the fuck?
Too trusting.
I swear to God.
I honestly, I would not. It would make more sense if they walked away from the shuttle, the door shuts, and then they hear beep beep. Like locking that alarm. Put that low jack on that bitch.
We can have one of those little apps on our communicators to like hit the button, you know, to unlock this fucker.
For real.
But yeah.
I just sent you a link about what I was talking about that I had seen. But
oh, okay.
There's a new real quick, there's a seven read the article. There's a new ongoing Star Trek comic book series coming out in October from IDW. It's gonna be titled simply Star Trek, and Sisko is gonna be headlining as a character. So definitely
gonna
look, and Data as well, looking forward to this.
Yeah,
but I don't understand how Data's gonna be there. Yeah. Whatever,
it'll probably take place before Nemesis.
Yeah, most likely.
But yeah, so that was one of my chief complaints, is like going, seriously, because it came up in that other episode, remember, the one of the those realities that they were kind of like, you know, the school and then the plane and all that stuff. Because when the new team came to check on the shuttlecraft, the door was open. I'm like, did we not like lock the doors? And like I said, it's not just Orville. I've seen this Star Trek. The old Star Trek used to kind of do it.
Yeah.
And some other shows.
Silly shit.
Just shit like that. I'm like, do we not? I really like the opening when Talon went to ask Malloy to go to dinner with her. And you know, because she said something about liking a guy, and it turned out to be Malloy, and he's in engineering talking to everybody. And she's like, oh, you know, that she's saying that she finds him funny and entertaining, and like to have dinner with him, and he's like, yeah, sure, we can go hang out. And everybody's just staring at him like,
that was funny.
I was cracking up. And then when he's like, oh, wait a minute. And then fucking Lamar goes, now you got it. I was like, he's such a moron.
I can see how that happens, though, because you're, as an adult, you're not even thinking about that.
Right.
So you're just like, yeah, man, we're cool, you know, blah, blah. And then you're like, oh, wait, fuck.
And then the green character, well, he's an attractive guy. Yeah, but he looks better away going than he does coming. But the episode was basically the Mocklins kidnap Bordas's daughter. Because that fucking Mocklin bitch manipulates Talon. And I was like,
yeah, she was such a fucking ass. Like, I was like, what the fuck is wrong with this shit? But you know what? That is accurate. There's people that are so caught up in whatever cause they're doing that they just drag children into it. And it's like, you really don't need to do that. Yeah. Like, it's just ridiculous.
And it was like, I saw this, the trope starting up. And when I saw the mocks, I was like, okay, she's going to get kidnapped and probably like because of what she is and stuff like that. And then as the, and then, you know, Adam brought up how the Orville just fucking left Kelly and Bordis. Like, they're out there somewhere, but we got to go back to Earth.
I'm almost tempted to watch it again because I don't remember them ever saying that they're going. They could have. It could have been an off-the-wall comment that said, we're going to go chase them down. But it didn't seem like anyone knew anything about it.
Yeah.
It was weird. Weird.
But then the whole thing changed, like the whole tone of the show changed, because I was a little nervous in the beginning, like, okay, because I predicted it. One of two things is going to happen. You know, she's going to manipulate the girl into being, you know, member of her thing, and she's going to get in trouble and stuff like that. Or she's going to get kidnapped by the other Mocklins and then like held for ransom or whatever. And then both happened. I was like, going, okay, so we're taking both tropes and putting them together. But then that second half of that story really kind of changed. Particularly when they started torturing the kid. Like,
yeah.
I was like, what the fuck, dude? Like,
that got heavy.
Yeah, the way he punched her and like the first punch he laid on her, I was like, oh shit.
I actually grimaced, dude. Like when he hit her, I was like, oh my God. Like, I kind of jumped. Because it was a kid, bro.
I literally shouted out, like, what the fuck? Like, yeah. Damn, dude.
It was crazy because I've seen so many scenes where adults are being, like, in that same exact situation. And you kind of go, damn, this is fucked up. I hope somebody comes gets them. As soon as it was a kid, bro, you're like, oh, like, this is fucking, I don't even want to watch this.
Yeah.
But he got his, bro.
Dude, when he went in there and he just started, when he just looked, he's like, you did this to my daughter. And then turned around, I was like, oh, shit. Like, he turned into fucking Klingon right there, dude.
Yeah, Bordis was not playing around.
And what he did to the other guy, I...
Dude, and then, so the guy already had one eye because there's some kind of wound. He took that fucking whack-ass pain stick. And for, you know what it reminded me of? The thing they had in Demolition Man, the concussion rod.
Yeah.
And he shoved it in the dude's good eye. I said, good, fuck that clown.
Oh,
and
man.
Then Kelly kind of, you know, Kelly pulled a Riker.
Yeah.
When, what was it, Code of Honor or something like
yeah,
that?
You're an officer. Yeah, you took an oath. And I was like, fuck the oath, dude. I told Adam, I was like, oh, dude, if that was us, I would have taken the kid outside and be like, wait till you were done. Like,
then I said, leave the kid in here. So she knows that this is what happens when somebody fucks with her. Like, I was like, I would have lost my mind, dude. Like, that's crazy. But then, you know, you think about it. Kelly makes a good point, because if he did kill him, it probably would have been an issue for whatever the fuck. Central Command or whatever the hell they call their shit. But yeah, it ended up being a good episode. But all around, I did like that, that absolute candor at the end where it's like, I know you won't forgive me. And Borders is like, that is a correct assessment. And then walked away. Like, what the fuck, bitch? Just get the fuck off the ship at that point.
I know. Seriously. I liked when Malloy stood up and said, like, what are we doing? Like, we bend over backwards for these people. And Ed is like, he's like giving him the like cut side of just Malloy just kind of goes off.
Fuck all that. Yeah. So, yeah, they did leave the union.
Yeah. So that's going to change the dynamic. And apparently I saw a trailer for next week. It looks like we're going to deal with what is that race again?
The Kalon
attack, which is going to now changes the universe in a way. So I'm curious to see. Obviously, it's going to lead up to something in the finale, because we're like, this was the third from the final episode of the season. So,
yeah.
So we'll see how that works out.
I hope the finale is an actual finale, because I have a feeling we're not going to see any more of this show. So don't leave me open. Fucking cliffhanger.
But they haven't done a cliffhanger, because I think Seth MacFarlane said that whenever we finished a season, we like to wrap it up, because in case we don't come back, we made sure we told a story.
We almost forgot Dolly Parton was in it.
Oh, she's an American treasure.
Yeah. I mean, anytime Dolly Parton is around, how does she have so much energy? What is she, like 100?
I have no seriously. Idea. Like she has so much energy. But it was cool seeing her. I was like, oh shit, Dolly Parton. But yeah, so the episode was actually a lot better than the last couple that we've dealt with.
I think we almost immediately said it was shitty in the beginning because we just expected it to be. Like, unlike the internet, Steve and I haven't been fully enjoying every episode this season. It's been really hit and miss, which is funny. I think it's funny that the internet is not at all sharing our opinion, but you and I are perfectly matched
I know.
On our opinions, which isn't – you would think, oh, we're not always perfectly matched in our opinions when we're watching things. But with this, we are. Like, every single problem is the same. I don't know. Maybe we're just geniuses and everybody else is an idiot. Yeah. You know?
It's tough being that way.
Per usual.
But, yeah, I mean, I got to admit, like, in the beginning, I was like, going, oh, God, we're going to fall into these tropes again. And then they just kind of took it in a different, darker direction. And I think because the story actually had bigger impact on the universe, and I thought – I thought that was a better episode, because that's kind of what I, like you were saying, you said before, is that we're missing kind of the world building. You know, because we really haven't dealt with other races. All we kept dealing with is with the Mauklins,
they're just background,
the Clydon, the Kalons, and the characters. And it's like, when you don't have that many episodes, you kind of need to kind of go, which is one of the reasons why I think Strange New Worlds did a little bit of a better job, is because every week it was something different.
Yeah.
You know,
well, the new and to Orville's credit, the new Star Trek's been having the same issue. And I've said it with that, too, where you have so few episodes compared to the 24-26 seasons back 24-26 episode seasons of back in the day. You don't get time to go to all these other races and be cool. But Star Trek has the benefit of, we already know who those races are, so you don't have to show them too much. You can just put them in there and I'll go, ha, that's a fucking this or that's a fucking that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And so, but some of the things that I had with these is that we were going back to aliens we met in season one and season two, which has been so long ago that we kind of forgot. I don't even
remember season one and season two.
Yeah. I'm gonna be honest. So it's kind of one of those, like, going, maybe we should, it's called New Horizons. Maybe we should have seen more, call back to one or two that may have an impact, but you know, let's try something else. Because even the thing is that we can have character stories, but in even TNG's Trek, you know, other characters or other species helped those characters tell their story for whatever episode. I think that's what was kind of missing in this one. But again, you know, according to the internet, we're probably wrong, and everybody else says it's not so.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Well, the internet, remember when the trans episode came out, and I made the point right away, because the internet was tripping on both sides, and they were like, she should be able to express herself the way she wants and be whoever she wants to be. And then people were like, she shouldn't be changed. And I'm like, does everyone forget that she was originally a girl?
Yeah.
I feel like everyone forgot that. Like, I don't care either way, but they literally just corrected a previous surgery. So the conservatives should have been incredibly happy about that episode.
Well, that was
the thing. Everyone should have been happy.
Because it's like, you know, they corrected a surgery, made her who she was. At the same time, it was the same thing for the left, because it's like, oh, she is who she was. They corrected a mistake.
So everyone should have been happy.
Right.
But everyone was upset. I was like, what the fuck is going on? But that was a pretty decent episode. I like that in that episode, Isaac, when he caught Kat slipping. I was like, okay, dude. They remind me of so many times in Next Generation where someone really wants to test Data and they fail that exam real quick.
Oh, and then what was this? Bordis's husband came back.
Yeah, but that was a really cool arc where he came back and it was really, you know, he was crying and apologized to the daughter, and I thought that was important, because you know what? Sometimes people fuck up, and sometimes people fuck up big time.
People get caught up in their own shit and they don't realize what they're doing.
And he was fighting, because I saw the internet and I kind of did it too, because he said, you're dead to me, basically, to the kid. And I was like, fuck him, you know. But and as shitty as that was, he was fighting an entire life of conditioning, basically, of what his culture says.
And then also, you know, he was also putting what he experienced on his kid, because
someone made a good point where they're like, they're so different. It's like, yeah, but Bordis is in the union. So you can kind of guess that he has a slightly different outlook. He's been exposed to other cultures and stuff like that. You know what I mean? So it's like, I don't know. It was nice that he came back. He apologized to Kelly, had to, since she saved Kit's life.
Right.
But invited her to dinner. I thought that was a really good moment.
Yeah. When the way he acted, I was going, you best be like better to her.
That nasty looking soup. I don't know what the fuck they was eating, but
yeah,
looked like they were having root soup or something.
I threw away the vegetable this was attached to. So here's the roots.
Disgusting ass vegetable.
All right. So let's get into the first part of a really good three-parter.
Nice. So this is called The Forge, episode 7 of season 4. First aired on November 19, 2004. It is the first arc of the first episode of the three-episode arc, The Sirenites. And it is episode 5 of 7 of the Vulcan versus Andoria arc that has been going on since season 1. When Earth's embassy on Vulcan is bombed, the investigation puts Archer and T'Pol on the trail of a Vulcan religious faction hiding in a treacherous desert. Teaser. In 2137, a young Vulcan male wanders alone through a subterranean tunnel on the planet Vulcan. He finds a sculptured casing that is completely covered in dust. Using a brush, the young Vulcan wipes away the dust from the casing to reveal a symbol. He mutters a single word, Surik. Everybody knows who Surik is. Come on. Act motherfucking one. I'm going to read a captain's log here. Admiral Maxwell Force's personal log. I've arrived on Vulcan, hopeful that the High Command is finally ready to conduct joint missions with Starfleet. End. 17 years later, in 2154, Admiral Forrest has traveled to Vulcan to learn of the Vulcan High Command's decision on whether to start conducting joint missions with Starfleet, as the captain's log surmises. At the embassy, Forrest discusses the matter with Admiral's ambassador, Saval, and is surprised to learn that Saval has not consulted by the council regarding the Vulcan reluctance to share technology. Saval explains that humans are confusing to them, and that the fast progress of human development in recent years greatly concerns the Vulcans. Suddenly, an explosion is heard by the two men, and Forrest quickly pushes Saval to the ground as the embassy is engulfed in flames. Because Forrest is a real one.
Right. Okay. He's a G. That's right. What was interesting in this, what I liked was where he's like talking about that they're unsure about humans and saying stuff like, he goes, you have the tenacity of Andorians and all of this. He goes, and he goes, and then you surprise us by, you know, having the logic of Vulcans. And he's like, you remind us of someone. And then Forrest is like, of Vulcans. He's like, and they're like, explains a little bit about how they were. And it took them 1,000 years to get it under control. And they've managed to do what they've done in like a century. So
they're jealous is basically,
basically what he's trying to say. You got your shit together. We did not.
It'd be funny for us. Like, listen, I'm sorry. Y'all is fucking slow. I don't know what to tell you. We out here doing big boy moves.
Would have been funny is if you see him tucking on his uniform. Well, you know.
Yeah, he's kind of scratching his chest. Like, I mean.
When you got it, you got it.
Just step out the way and let the humans take care of this, all right?
Don't worry, we'll carry you through.
On the Enterprise, the senior officers are enjoying a spirited game of basketball in Launch Bay 2. Phlox, who is exceptionally good and has to keep switching teams, likens the game to Octrin fertility contest.
Yeah, this motherfucker, they're over there playing basketball and like no skills. Like you see these characters, like they have no skill of playing basketball. I'm not sure why. Should have been playing water polo. But fucking Phlox is standing in the corner. They throw it to him. He just does a little shot. Doesn't even jump. Boop, right in. I was like, jeez. He's like, this game is fun. And I was like,
Phlox is good at everything.
Of course. Mary Sue.
T'Pol then summons Archer away from the game to give him the bad news, because we all know T'Pol's not playing the game.
Right.
Captain Sarlog's supplemental. Enterprise has arrived at Vulcan as ordered 3 days after the bombing of Earth's embassy. The death toll stands at 43, and I have lost my friend, Admiral Forrest. Vulcan authorities still have no lead on who's responsible. It's kind of sad, bro. You know?
I still wonder why they had to kill him off.
I don't know. It's been a long road. Archer is met by Ambassador Velas at Enterprise's airlock. Velas is the head of the Vulcan High Command. He is joined by Ambassador Saval and Stell, chief investigator of the Security Directorate. After Archer rejects the suggestion that the bombing was planted by Andorians, Stell reluctantly reveals that the Sirenites are also under suspicion. Wasn't Spock's brother a Sirenite?
Because he rejected.
They're the emotion.
No. Sirenites are complete logic.
Oh yeah, that's right. I'm getting my wires crossed. All right. Are also under suspicion. Archer mistakes this as the name of another species, but T'Pol corrects him, explaining that they are a small group.
He's like, I never heard of that of that species before. T'Pol's like, it's not a species.
It's like, thank God you're fucking handsome, because I don't know what the fuck.
Marry someone rich is what she said to him.
Explains that they are a small group of Vulcans who follow a corrupt form of Serac's teachings. The Sirenites' logical and peaceful nature make them unlikely candidates. When Archer asks if there is any evidence, Saval points out that the embassy is officially considered to be on Earth soil, therefore placing any investigation of the crime scene under Starfleet jurisdiction. Archer sends Lieutenant Reed and Ensign Mayweather transport down to investigate the blast site where these are the two gumshoes that are going to figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. I'm surprised they didn't send Trip, because that would have just made it perfect.
Where Mayweather uncovers an undetonated bomb, Reed scans the device and discovers Vulcan DNA on the controls. A closer scan triggers the device, but the two officers manage to transport back to Enterprise seconds before it explodes. Da, da, da.
What I thought was funny was when he's like, when he finds it Mayweather's holding the piece of board up and Malcolm's trying to do it. He goes, yeah, I got to be careful because the signal might set it off. And then Malcolm looks at him. He goes, and then Malcolm notices Mayweather looking at him, and he goes, hey, look on the bright side. If it goes off, you won't know. Yeah. I was like, damn. Fucking British.
Floss's investigation matches the recovered DNA to Pau, a well-known Sirenite. A little too close to T'Pol,
the funny thing is that, you know, for all of you that are really into Trek, yeah, this is the one from Amok Time.
Yeah. Da, da, da. The captain asks if she has a... one of the coldest beats in Star Trek. The captain asks if she has a previous criminal record, but T'Pol explains that the DNA of every Vulcan is recorded at birth. It's a little one-world order. I'm just saying.
It's a little violation of HIPAA right there.
Yeah. The Mormons would love the Vulcans. I'm just saying. You know? When Archer attempts to pursue the leads further, however... Stell says that since T'Pau is Vulcan, the overall investigation coincidentally. Thank you. Now falls under Vulcan jurisdiction, and that Starfleet assistance is not required. The fucking Vulcans are so bureaucratic. It's annoying. First, we're on Earth soil, right? Now it's a Vulcan, so who else would have planted the bomb?
Oh, wait, you confirmed what we thought? Okay, now it's our turn. We take over.
Because they probably just thought it was the Andorians. That's why. He will have Saval inform them of anything they need to know, much to Archer's chagrin. Archer enters Enterprise's cargo bay, where the bodies of the humans lost in the bombing are being held for transport back to Earth. While quietly reflecting over the coffin of Admiral Forrest, the captain is joined by Saval, who notes that the admiral died saving his life when he could have saved his own instead. Saval makes clear there is no reason or evidence to suggest the Sirenites are responsible for the bombing and does not understand why they are being accused. He urges Archer not to leave the investigation in the hands of the Vulcan High Command, but to question everything and go down to Vulcan, while also promising the captain his full support. Meanwhile,
I was really surprised how Saval kind of was like, yo, man, don't trust nobody. If he suddenly became, I was expecting to be like, you know, Captain Archer, you and I haven't been together. You know, suddenly starts talking like Alex Jones and shit. It's like, you're like going, what happened to you, dude?
He red-pilled.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Knows now. Meanwhile, it'd be funny if he's like, listen, I just wanted to come tell you, the Vulcan High Command is on this woke media bullshit, okay? And we really need to stick together on
this. We started noticing this when the frogs were turning out gay.
Hey, shit. Meanwhile, Koss visits his wife to Paul in her quarters. To Paul is not particularly pleased to see her husband, but he insists that a face-to-face meeting was necessary. Their marriage is very weird. Just going to throw that out there.
Yeah, I was like going, damn, can we be any closer? Like, even his mere existence, she acts like they've been married for like 30 years. Yeah. The way she was reacting to him.
She acts like my wife.
You know? Yeah, pretty much.
What do you want?
For a minute, I thought it was you and Lorraine. I was like, going, is this? I thought I need to fix my prescription.
All right. And also, too, I feel bad for Koss because it's like, I just married this really hot chick and I just want to get a little play, bro. Come on. Yeah.
It's like, first they say, get married, then she has to have sex with you. Don't work that way.
It gives to Paul an IDIC that Teles, her mother, wanted passed along, claiming it was a family heirloom. Koss explains that the new security conditions on Vulcan following the bombing have forced Teles into hiding because she is actually a Sirenite. Da, da, da.
But the funny thing was that like, I like how Koss didn't. I think Koss knew, like I felt that he knew, but it was one of those things where he was like, I'm just going to keep it to myself and going to play along with this, you know?
Yeah. I also think Koss, it's based on the previous episodes too, I think he more married her for status than anything else.
I think he married her because she was hot.
Yeah, I mean, keep it real. He's bragging to his Vulcan friends.
Right. You know, when he comes, he's all, you know, very stern and proper. But when he walks into the face, he's got that pimp walk right there. Yeah. He's puts like, his hands out for everybody to high five him and shit.
He's all, friends, it is highly logical to marry the baddest bitch in the neighborhood. Okay.
This is your 57th attempt to try to elicit an emotional response from us based on your marriage to your wife. And it worked, motherfucker.
Yeah. To Paul, having never seen the supposed heirloom before, presents the IDIC to Archer, explaining that it has been modified and activates it. The IDIC displays a holographic topographical map of Vulcan's forge. Against Tucker's warnings that the forge is a hellhole with electrical sandstorms and geomagnetic instabilities that prevent the use of any technology, Archer decides to transport down to Vulcan with T'Pol in search of the Sirenites. Saval provides data on the gaps in Vulcan satellite surveillance so that Archer and T'Pol's beam-in won't be monitored, but he remains aboard to assist Tucker with the investigation from orbit.
I like how Trip is looking at it. It's like, I'm guessing we're not supposed to have this. And then Saval looks at him. He's like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Archer,
did I say I'm blind now? Did I say I'm blind? Like, I can't see what anybody has?
I don't know what the fuck's going on. I wasn't even here, bro. Archer and T'Pol beam down to Gateway. T'Pol explains to the captain that it was here that Serac supposedly began his journey into the forge. Archer questions T'Pol about her apparent lack of belief in some of the stories of Serac. She answers by telling him that Sarek's writings from that period were lost and that the current copies of his teachings are open to interpretation, a fact Archer finds familiarly amusing. It's funny because the Star Trek does that a lot. Like, you have Sarek and then you have Kales, and it's very – and it's something that's true on Earth too, where it's based on a historical fact, but then it gets very like – Achilles, you know what I mean? Like, it gets very glamorized and over the years, you know?
Yeah, because when he said that, he goes, you know, it's been open to interpretation. And I was like, well, if it's Archer and he's from, I can't remember where Archer's from.
New York.
Oh, upstate New York. You know, I'm pretty sure he's well familiar about the very, particularly in New York, all the different interpretations of that book.
Later at night, their conversation is abruptly interrupted by a shellat screech. Fortunately, they are able to get to high ground before the creature reaches them. T'Pol tells him about the domesticated shellat Vulcan children keep as pets and says that the wild one may keep them trapped there for several days. By the way, Vulcan as a planet sucks, dude. It's not a very nice planet. It's just a big desert.
Think of Arizona with a mixture of Nevada.
No, think of Nevada, but like the middle of nowhere. Like, not the strip. You know what I mean? Like,
not that's Vegas. I'm talking about everything outside of Vegas and even Laughlin, because Laughlin's pretty barren. But, you know, everything
Vulcan
else.
Vulcan is Laughlin. That makes sense, dude.
There we go.
Enterprise.
But I like that. But the part that they left out was she's like, you know, he's like, that's a pet. He's like that. She says something like, what was it? Vulcans don't forget to. He goes, those are pets. And she's like, you have Porthos. And he goes, yeah, but Porthos doesn't try to eat me if I skip its dinner. And then she's like, well, Vulcans never forget to feed these animals. I was
exactly.
Like, can't imagine why.
You know what Vulcan actually kind of looks like? It looks like Mars.
Yeah.
Like the sky and the dirt and stuff. On Enterprise, Phlox is examining the bomb to find any DNA traces. He's also he was also in the bomb squad for 10 years on Denoblia, so, you know, no big deal. He discovers that the telomeres from T'Pau's DNA are too long to belong to the 32-year-old Vulcan and concludes that someone has falsified the evidence. They must have been taken from her infant DNA in the Vulcan database. From a recording Reed recovered from the embassy, they are able to pinpoint the moment at which T'Pau's DNA signature was recorded. They are not able to identify the suspect, but the guard on the recording seems to recognize the person. Coincidentally, that same guard, Corporal Asquith, is currently in the Enterprise's sick bay in a coma. Mr. Asquith. That's a weird name. On Vulcan, the shellat is driven away by a person named Erev.
Fucking pulled an Obi-Wan Kenobi by doing a howl. I was like, somebody saw Star Wars that weekend, I'm assuming?
Yeah, for real. This is fucking Luke coming up. Who claims to be on a pilgrimage. Of course he is.
He came up and went, hello there.
Archer pretends that he is also on a pilgrimage and asks if the three of them can walk together. Why would he believe a human was on a pilgrimage?
Because Archer's like
to the forge.
I'm on a pilgrimage too. I'm one of those like converted people.
Yeah, I just really liked what you guys were doing down here, and you know, it's. Erev agrees, but not without saying that the forge will be hard on the human. As they walk through the desert, Erev asks some questions of the captain and comes to the conclusion that Archer and T'Pol are not really on a pilgrimage.
It's funny because my favorite part was when he's like, you know, oh yeah, I'm on a pilgrimage. He's like, well, then you should know the first rule of, it was a question that the computer asked Spock in Star Trek IV, Kerry Kinn's first law of metaphysics. And then he's like, well, I know, Einstein's first rule, and I was, and when he said that, I went, nothing unreal exists. Like, I was like,
that's right.
And I was, and I'm like, going, oh shit, I could have passed for Vulcan on there when I said that. And that's when I realized I was a fucking nerd.
Their discussion is interrupted by a sand firestorm because Vulcan.
Yeah.
Vulcan just sucks, dude.
That would have been funny to hear Archer every so often go, God, this place sucks.
Can we go back to Earth? Fuck. Act 3. Aboard Enterprise, Tucker and Phlox speak to Zaval, hoping he could find someone capable of melding with Asquith. The comatose guard. Such a silly, that's like a dead name you made up in D&D. Given the taboo nature of the practice, Zaval won't even consider their request, but as he turns to leave, Tucker reveals that the DNA evidence implicating T'Pau has been planted on the bomb. Assured by Phlox that the forgery could be proven, Zaval, realizing that the tampering with the DNA records suggests a high-level conspiracy, offers to meld with the guard himself. It's funny how it's supposed to be this rare thing, but everybody can do it.
And it's funny, too, because, this version of Vulcan, or these teachings of Vulcan, said that that's frowned upon. Mind meld. But what I thought was funny was fucking Trip using Spock's line on him going, you know, it's like, well, don't the needs of the many? Because he didn't want to do it because he's like, you know, and he's like, and you could kind of see this like, fuck. Like,
fuck God, you.
They got me.
In the Forge, the three quote unquote pilgrims find a shelter.
Are they in quotes?
Yeah. Find a shelter from the sandstorm, sand firestorm in a cave.
Dude, they should have played, they should have played fucking The Doors, Shelter from the Storm.
Stupid. After seeing T'Pau's IDIC, he realizes who she is. Arif
says
that
fine bitch that I heard that's married to Kos that's on Enterprise?
Yo, Kos been fucking bragging out here in these streets talking shit. Arif says that he has respect for the captain's actions regarding the Pajem Sanctuary in particular and agrees to bring them to Carif Sanctuary when the storm is over. T'Pau's mother is hiding there with the other Sirenites. Archer then tells him the real reason they are there. Archer explains that the High Command claims the Sirenites believe in a corrupted version of Serac's teachings. To that, Arif answers that some say Serac's Katra was found and is now carried by a Sirenite. According to the rumor, all who mind meld with him may touch Serac's mind. Looking at T'Pau, Arif says that Serac said the mind meld was the heritage of all Vulcans, whether they believe in it or not. On Enterprise, Zaval, Phlox, and Trip meet with Velas and Stell. When they ask who the real culprit is, Zaval reveals the truth. It is Stell, bitch. They claim to have an
eyewitness. I thought it was a little weird that Zaval leaned in and goes, you motherfucker. I know what you, I know your secret.
I fucking knew it, dog. They claim to have an eyewitness who identifies him as the one who planted the bomb in the embassy. When Stell and Vlas ask to speak with the witness, Phlox says that his patient is in a coma. After Zaval admits to performing a mind meld, Stell protests, noting that telepathic evidence is inadmissible. Vlas informs the ambassador that he will be summoned to appear before the High Command to account for his actions. Uh-oh. Act 4. In the Forge, the storm is gaining in strength. T'Pau is hit by an electric discharge while trying to reseal the cavern entrance. Another discharge hits Arev, deadly this time. Just before dying, Arev mind melts with the captain, saying that he must carry it to the sanctuary. On Enterprise, Zaval is going to turn himself into the Vulcan High Command. When Tucker protests and accuses the ambassador of not trusting humans, Zaval responds, peace and long life, suggesting that he has more respect for Tucker than the engineer realizes. Basically, Tucker just yelling at people like he always is.
Well, it's Archer's funny, too, because you kind of, because you know, Trip doesn't have any affinity for Vulcans, much like Archer, but you've always seen Saval always being kind of a dick to everybody.
Yeah.
But now it's like, and I think the death of the Admiral really kind of affected him. And then kind of,
especially because he threw his life down for him, and they probably just argued all the time.
Yeah.
You know,
and then realized that like that meant a lot. Like it, like, you know, like even though we can argue with all the time, we still have respect for each other.
Exactly. You know? Archer is awakened by T'Pol. He says Arev said something to him, which turns out to be the Vulcan word for remember. But neither Archer nor T'Pol
understand. I did the snap. I did the Leo snap when he said that. I was like, oh, Star Trek 2.
But neither Archer nor T'Pol understand what it means. They agree to continue searching for the sanctuary, which is supposed to be nearby. After burying Arev, Archer has strange intuitions and finds the sanctuary easily. As they enter through a disguised portal, Archer tells T'Pol not to resist. Instead, they are seized by a group of armed Vulcans. To be continued. Background information. This episode marks the death of Maxwell Forrest. However, he dies off screen. However, he dies off screen, and his death is not apparent until Archer's log entry. This episode confirms that there is a United Earth government. Its great seal has already appeared in Home, the episode Home. This is the only – I mean, didn't we already know? Well, I guess it had never been revealed in Star Trek, but we knew it.
Yeah.
Just because it had been referenced before. This is the only episode.
Because we ain't bitches is really
that's
why.
Right. We understand the history of the future. Okay. This is the only episode in the Vulcan Reformation trilogy that was shot on location at Vulcan. Okay. As scenes in the Forge were shot at an industrial site in Simi Valley in Ventura County, northwest of Los Angeles. On the road leading there, from the main street, the production staff were amused to see a coincidental sign for Vulcan Materials Company. filming began on Tuesday, the 14th of September, 2004, and ran for the usual 7 work days through Wednesday. Robert Foxworth previously played Admiral Leeton in the Star Trek Deep Space Nine episode Homefront and Paradise Lost. Interestingly enough, Homefront also opened with the bombing of a diplomatic conference. This motherfucker jinxed.
Yeah, basically, if he's in an episode, something's blowing up.
Something's blowing up. The script and production report at StarTrek.com established the Earth Embassy was in Chicago.
I thought you could say Chicago.
Chicago. I was about to say that, too. The questions that Arev asked Archer in the desert... who said logic is the cement of our civilization with which we ascend from chaos using reason as our guide? And what is Kari Kin Tha's first law of metaphysics?
Nothing unreal exists.
What?
Nothing unreal exists.
Right. Are from Star Trek IV's The Voyage Home. When the computer in the Vulcan temple asks them of Spock, the answers are to Plana Hoth, matron of Vulcan philosophy, and nothing unreal resists, as Steve has flexed on us twice already in this episode.
What's funny is that that T Plana Hoth is the writer said that was his Star Trek Easter, his Star Wars Easter egg in Star Trek when he wrote that.
Oh, it's Hoth. That's cool, dude.
Yeah, T Plana Hoth. He says he wrote that in there as his Star Wars little Easter egg.
I still like sometimes I'll find the clip on YouTube of First Contact where they're having the big battle, and you can see the Millennium Falcon in the back. I always get a kick out of that. Arev / Sirens transference of Sirax Katra to Archer is an homage to Spock's transfer to Leonard McCoy in Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan. Revealed in Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. As in the films, Siren tells Archer to remember, albeit in Vulcan. Should they say it in English? I'm just saying. It just seems like it's an added layer of complexity.
It's that America. Necessary. They should be. They should be using.
Just speak English. American. Yeah. Exactly. Okay. Let's stop it.
Because American's a language, you know.
That's right. Just like Roman is.
Exactly.
Fuck, don't get me started again, bro.
For the continuation of this conversation, please check the Lazy Geeks 446.
The Shallat is a Vulcan creature mentioned in TOS Journey to Babel. It was described by Spock's mother, Amanda, as a fat teddy bear, and that Spock himself was quite fond of this pet. Responsive to Dr. McCoy's teasing, Spock added that the teddy bears were alive and had 6-inch fangs.
I remember that because he's like, oh, so you had a teddy bear?
Yeah. Curiously enough, in one of the early episodes, T'Pol said that Vulcans didn't have pets. Oh, yeah. She did say that.
Yeah.
I would love if Tucker was like, this lying bitch.
What you find out is that it's like, no, T'Pol didn't have pets.
Yeah, T'Pol didn't have pets. Yeah.
Because her mom told her. Her mom says, like, Vulcans don't have pets.
But I saw no. No. No, okay. But I was at the shop and they had them in the window.
These guys at school, they have ones. They're not supposed. Vulcans don't have pets.
Yeah, they're Andorian scum. Whoa, mom.
They belong to Bajem.
Oh shit.
That was one thing that I forgot to mention when you were talking about when they kind of skipped over in the cave, because when what's his name was questioning when T'Pol mentioned about her mother, and he goes, she had a daughter that served on the Enterprise, and then or a Starfleet vessel. And then he looked at Archer and then he goes, you must be the one that exposed Pajem.
Yeah.
And he was like, are we going to have a problem? And then Archer was like,
he kind of stood up a little taller.
Yeah. Like his chest kind of puffed out a little bit. And he was reaching into his pen. He's like, the Vulcan High Council desecrated that monastery. So it was like going, okay, he's cool.
So they were fucking with him.
Yeah.
Which makes sense, because if the Serenites are pure logic like that and they're like true followers of Serac's teachings, they're not going to be fucking spying on Andorians from a sacred monastery. Right. It's fucking weird. After the season one episode Shuttle Pod 1 and season 3's Carpenter Street, this is the third and final episode in which no scene takes place on Enterprise's bridge. The uniform type Archer wears in the desert has its rank pips on the collar, similar to Star Trek The Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, and Star Trek Voyager-style uniforms. And last, the security desk in the embassy was previously used as the helm console on the USS Pastor from TNG All Good Things. Dun, 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 dun. And obviously the next episode is the continuation of this arc. Yeah, man. I mean, we out here.
Yeah, I liked. In all honesty, I've watched the entire trilogy.
You stay cheat. I'm tired of it.
And I really like this trilogy. Like this had, it really literally has in the three parts a beginning, middle, and end. It all felt cohesive. The cool thing about this particular one, I like because of the fact that it could have easily been a two-parter, but it allowed the episode to kind of really breathe and give a lot of these characters moments in there because they mention Andorians, obviously they're going to show up a little bit later, and it really allows this whole thing to kind of breathe. I really liked the episode. It kept my interest. By the time I got the to be continued, I was like, what? Like, I totally forgot, you know, that it was like, oh, shit, it's already been an hour. So I really enjoyed this one. I really kind of wish they led with this instead of the one with Brett Spiner. Yeah. But it really kind of like the way I felt, the way we felt with the Orville, like the first episode to like this one. It was like a nice bump up. I really, really kind of enjoyed this one. But that's all I got to say on this one.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, going back to Lower Decks, I forgot to mention we didn't mention Sisko Restaurant. Sisko's dad's restaurant in the
oh yeah.
I was like, I wonder how Mariner's doing. Holding up. She's holding up just fine. Have you been sitting there the whole time waiting for that? No. Yeah, she has.
I can't wait till that season drops. What's the date on that again?
August, the end of August, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, so.
So we have no Trek until the end of August, bro.
I know. This is the longest stint.
You know what this feels? It feels a little bit like when Enterprise was canceled.
Yeah, it feels like that 15-year stretch between Enterprise and Discovery. It's just
thank
like,
God it's not going to be 15 years. I remember there were, and I'm such a fucking Star Trek nerd, dude. Like during that 15 year of no Trek, there would be moments just randomly over like, I wish there was just new Trek on. Like, like, can we just have a new show just randomly? You know,
there was a, somebody had asked Shatner over the weekend about Trek, and he said that he thinks Gene Roddenberry will be rolling over in his grave.
I commented on that on Twitter, actually.
Oh, really?
Well, people, go ahead, finish what you're saying.
And yeah, and some people were obviously agreeing, some people weren't. And then somebody posted a meme that says, "Hey, William Shatner's opinion doesn't matter." I was like,
I mean, it doesn't, you know. And it's what I commented on, because someone was like, "This is ridiculous," and I'm like, technically, he's right, but he probably doesn't think he's right for the right reason. He's right because Roddenberry didn't like interpersonal conflict.
Yeah.
So you could, and I even said in the tweet that you could tell later seasons of TNG got more interesting. You know.
Well, even the writers said that
it's confirmed. I mean, it's confirmed. Although I don't think that's why 91-year-old. Kirk was saying that, you know, and it's, I think it's funny because to me, he said some kind of off color comments. He's from a different era. I don't take them too seriously. I respect the man for the role he played, and then we move on with it. I miss that we used to do that when someone really old said something stupid. You kind of just went, eh, he's old.
Yeah.
And you just moved on. Like, who cares? He didn't really say anything that bad. I think the most controversial thing he said was the whole he'd be rolling over his grave. But I agree with that point. But he was being kind of a dick. And the problem is that someone made a good point that that most Star Trek fans know. When even during the movies, when he was filming those, he was talking shit about the Star Trek like world a lot. Like, he just wanted to get away from it. And then at some point, he figured out that this was the only thing he was going to be remembered for.
Right.
So he jumped back on the bandwagon. But I don't care. You know, he's an older guy. You know, he can have his opinions. We can move on. You know, it's not a big deal. He has nothing to do with what's currently going on.
The thing, too, is that, you know, if Gene Roddenberry was still alive, DS9 would never have happened. Or at least the one that we remembered.
Voyager probably wouldn't have happened either.
Yeah, that's true. Or at least the way it was. But, you know, the problem is that...
And let's be honest, TNG wouldn't have lasted so long.
Yeah.
Because it would have got boring.
The thing, too, is that, you know, Roddenberry wasn't exactly liked by Paramount or, you know, or any of them over there because he wanted to exert so much control. And they were like, yeah, but to be honest, if it continued the way it was... We wouldn't have Star Trek now, at least under Roddenberry's rule. You know, it would have probably petered out, or it would have been too unrealistic. Because the thing is that, yeah, you still have interpersonal conflicts. You have these situations, you have these wars, but the Federation is actually different. And the thing is too, is that through Star Trek, you're able to explore things that us as a society went through, particularly after 9/11. You know, and the fundamentalism and stuff like that, that Star Trek was able to touch on, you know, and I just think it's, you know, I think it was a little, when I heard that remark, I kind of was just like, you haven't been on Star Trek in like 30 years. I think you can kind of chill out now.
His opinion is just irrelevant. They bring him to the cons because he was Captain James T. Kirk.
Right.
You know, it is what it is. But I did want to bring this up. I just saw this, Alex Kurtzman, he at Comic-Con, he reconfirmed that Starfleet Academy and Section 31 are still currently in development. We haven't. I know Starfleet Academy's been getting some buzz, but we haven't heard much about Section 31. And it's nice to hear that that's still getting worked on.
Yeah.
Also, Jerry Ryan. Well, this isn't confirmed anything, but Jerry Ryan said she'd be happy to come back for like a Picard spinoff with Seven and Raffi, which I think would be fun. Right. And Kate Mulgrew has been hinting that she might return to live action for something.
Cool.
So we'll see. I love fucking Kate Mulgrew, dude. She's one of my favorite captains. She just unfortunately was on one of the worst shows.
Maybe Picard. Maybe we'll see her in Picard.
Maybe. That'd be fucking dope. Because she's an admiral.
Yeah, she was an admiral last time I saw her.
Yeah.
Well, she was. I know she was. She was an admiral in what was it? Nemesis.
She's only one thing I like about Kate Mulgrew is she's one of the last actresses that was trained by this like famous acting coach. I can't remember her name, but that's why she has that fucking mid-Atlantic accent that they all used to have back in the day. And I love hearing because it's so fucking posh. It's like the closest Americans get to posh.
I remember,
is that mid-Atlantic accent. So fucking slick sounding.
I remember when my brother and I saw her, like, we kept thinking like, God damn, she sounds like she could be Katharine Hepburn.
She played Katharine
Hepburn.
Yeah,
and then later she played Katharine Hepburn in a play. And I was like, going, nice.
Yeah. I like Kate Mulgrew. I think she's really cool.
Yeah. I think she's underrated.
Huh?
I think she's underrated.
Underrated, yeah. Well, I heard from all – I haven't watched a lot of Voyager because I just couldn't get into it. But I've also heard that season four is when it really starts to pick up because you get – they get rid of Cass for one. Hated Cass. And then you get seven and nine.
How did you really feel?
Yeah. You get seven and nine in there and the storylines get a little bit more punchy and stuff like that. And also they say that Kate Mulgrew starts to really settle in because she was, I guess, a little stiff in the first season. I'm remembering things from when I was a kid, but I was thinking about rewatching it, especially since we have at least starting it because we have no Trek right now. So,
yeah.
But yeah.
I know the next month it's like, ugh.
We still have the Orville.
Okay.
Yeah.
But also at the same time that comes out, Andor, Star Wars, that Star Wars one, Andor comes out. So I'm like going, oh, cool. At least I'll have Star Wars and Star Trek at the same time. So.
Dun, 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 dun. I'm sorry. I have to say, Deep Space Nine, you can say whatever you want about the show. One of the greatest theme songs.
Oh, yeah.
Deep Space Nine theme song is the shit. The shit. The shit. The greasy shit. Okay. Thanks for tuning in. You've ditched the ads and would like to stay independent. We can only do that with your support. If you would like to donate to make this podcast and all the shows on the Lazy Geeks Network self-sustaining, you can go to thelazygeeks.com and click on the donate button.
And if you can't help us out monetarily, we get it. But you can also share this show with your buddies and rate the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you can. This will give us bigger exposure. All of this helps. Trust me. Just let it happen.
Just
let it
happen. Stop. You can check out our flagship podcast, The Lazy Geeks, where we discuss being a geek in an adulting world, available where you found this one.
And if you want to be a part of the show, hit us up on the comments, questions, or if you have ideas for future episodes, you can go ahead and catch us up on the social media, you know, the Facebook, the Twitter, and the Instagram, all under at The Lazy Geeks, or email us, themailbag@thelazygeeks.com. So that is it for us this week. So until next time, I'm Stephen Vargas.
I'm Adam Riley.
Two to beam up.